Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan joining us, as she does every Tuesday for Open Mic, is Nancy Kane. Nancy's an historian at the Harvard Business School. She holds the James E. Robison Chair of Business Administration. And her latest book is Ernest Shackleton. This is about to be a new one, by the way. Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. Nancy, good to see you.
Always great to be here. So the question, as I said when I was announcing that you were coming, is people know that CVS's that are have pharmacies in them are banning cigarettes, and some without pharmacies have banned them as well. So is this just about the bottom line here, or is there a connection between they're doing what's good for our health, good for their bottom line?
I think the answer is it's both, Marjorie. So what is happening to CVS is that they are becoming a healthcare company. We think of them as a drugstore, but they're becoming a healthcare company. So I did some financial digging today. Let's remember there are about 7,600 CVS stores in America. Their revenue for last year, get this, listen, $126 billion. Now, a big hunk of that, and this is where we get to the healthcare part, and that takes us to the bottom line part, comes from a company called Caremark that they acquired about 7 years ago, 2007. Caremark is what's called a health benefits pharmacy benefits management company. So they help manage all those different insurance programs that we have that give you the $7 prescription, right? And they own that. And a big hunk of that $126 billion, like I couldn't parse it out in the 10-K and SEC filing, but close to $80 billion of the 126 is from basically pharmacy managing pharmacy insurance. And then if you look at the next big revenue raiser, come to profit in a second because that's the bottom line, the next big revenue raiser is their pharmacies. They have 26,000 pharmacists and nurse practitioners working in those 7,600 stores. Then, right, think about something called MinuteClinic, which CVS has been the most progressive, the most advanced, the most aggressive.
They're great.
It's like a little doctor's office. Or a flu shot or whatever. Right?
Or strep throat.
Strep throat, yeast infection, children's earache, the most common ailments that drive us either to a doctor's appointment if we can get one before the pain and whatever aggro of our illness, right, doesn't kill us, or often, believe it or not, increasingly after-hours care or an emergency room.
Oh, and you're there for that happened to me a million times when my kids were little with ear infections or strep throats. You're 6 hours in the emergency room at Children's Hospital.
Right, and all you really need is some kind of quick, you know, snap test and then a proper drug prescription for an antibiotic. So it makes so much sense cost-wise, convenience-wise, health-wise, to have those things. So CVS has about 750 of them now, of the 7,600, so a tenth of the stores. Larry Menlo, the CEO, who's clearly overseen a lot of this, has said we're going to double that number in the next 3 years. So they are becoming a healthcare company. And then if you look at where they make their bottom line, because this is what they're positioning themselves, not just to be, you know, a drugstore, but to be seriously a place where you can manage a whole bunch of healthcare needs and do it within the increasingly important purview of the Affordable Care Act, which we all know, you've talked about this a lot on the show, is going to put a great premium on efficiency, cost management, you know, cost-effective outcomes. CVS is like remaking themselves for this new world. I think it's fascinating, and they are certainly not doing it if they don't think it's going to feed the bottom line. So that led me into thinking about how profitable are cigarettes. They say they're going to lose $2 billion in a year in sales of cigarettes. So that's just a small portion of $126 billion. About $72 million in what would otherwise be earnings per share. So that's net income. So that's not trivial, but it's not a huge hunk of the over $5.5 billion they earned last year in profit. So cigarettes, it turns out, the average margin on cigarettes is actually somewhere, less than 20%, much less than 20%. It's, you know, even though that pack of Marlboros, I learned because I don't smoke, costs as much as $10 in Boston.
Yeah, it's crazy.
A carton can cost $100. Mm-hmm. A huge amount of that is taxes, right? Even though you have these big price tags, the actual margins are much smaller than, say, selling a liter bottle of Coke or, for pharmacies and drugstores, selling beauty products where the margins, the gross margins, can be as high as 50%.
So 20% obviously then is
much
quite
smaller,
low.
Much smaller, right?
And like, smaller than the healthcare services margin that she wants.
And than the pharmacy sales, the drug sales. So this company is very foresighted. And what I think is so fascinating about it from a historian standpoint is here's the world of healthcare being remade and for lots of different reasons, including government regulation and the economics of the whole, right, the efficiency and possibility of the whole economy. And here's a company that's literally reinventing itself as we speak, right? And, you know, God bless it, it's headquartered in Woonsocket. Right, I think CVS comes from
socket.
Consumer Value yeah, Store.
Like
it has,
trivia question.
It has, you know, kind of a nice, solid historical footprint, and now here they are on the cutting edge of the new world. I think it's just a great story, great strategy.
So
story.
When the American Cancer Society came out about a minute and a half after they said no to cigarettes, to say, "quote, it was an act of corporate courage," it would have been more appropriate to say it was an act of corporate vision about what the future looks like. And essentially, you're saying this is not just good for the public health of America.
Which it is.
But it's obviously good for the ultimate bottom line of CVS.
Exactly. But again, let me wear my historian's cap. The reason most businesses fail isn't because they implode. It's because historically they manage themselves into acceptable decline. Right? Think about General Motors. Right? And so this is a company saying we're going to place a bet. So there's courage even in the strategic bottom line bet that we're going to do something very different. We're going to say no, RJR. You can't sell your stuff here. No, we know you come into the store for a pack of cigarettes. That's why they're right behind the counter. They're no longer going to be that visible, high visibility place with in front of the clerk. No, we're not going to do that.
Why can't they be hypocrites? Why can't they? I mean, Marjorie's going to yell at me when I say this, but I'll say it anyway. They're still selling candy bars. They're still selling sugary drinks, but to many people are as serious a problem for the kids of America as cigarettes are for kids and adults in America. Why can't they just be hypocrites, sell cigarettes, and try to become a healthcare company?
Well, it'll be interesting to see as they go further, if I'm right about this, and, Menlo's not being cagey. He says we're positioning ourselves.
Menlo, the CEO.
Yeah. He's saying it doesn't make sense for us to sell cigarettes and then, try and help people get better.
Yeah.
And I think cigarettes are probably the most glaring example,
if
you will, of this.
Yeah, if you only drink one Coke a month. Right. I mean, there's a moderation angle with the sugary drinks and the candy.
Right. But, I was happened to be in a car the other day, and the guy, my driver was talking. He'd been a sourcing manager at CVS. Spoke very highly of the company. And he used to source candy, right? Because that's a big driver of traffic.
What does source candy mean?
I mean, he's in charge of buying candy for the store from suppliers. So he deals with sources, right? And we talked about Hershey and Mars and whatnot and the huge events that generate candy sales. So it'll be interesting to see over time whether they still want to devote so much energy and shelf space and square footage to candy, right, in the wake of what we're talking about as a childhood obesity epidemic. So I think this may only be the first shot over the bow, but some of it, Jim, I think the reason cigarettes first is because cigarettes are so hated in general. Even though 18% of Americans smoke, right, down from 40% in 1970, but stalled since 2004, hasn't fallen since 2004. Even though less than 20% of the population smokes, we all know we shouldn't. We all don't want secondhand smoke. We hate cigarettes now, right? I remember when I was a child growing up, my parents all smoked. It was a glamorous thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And now cigarette smokers are outliers and outcasts. So I think this may be the first shot over the bow in terms of what they feel they can sell as they become, if I'm right, and other people aren't saying this as well, more and more of a healthcare company. There's a second piece, though, behind your question, and that is what are consumers in a lather about? So cigarettes, we can all be in a lather about, right? Mm-hmm. Butter versus margarine, right? Beauty products that may use, preservatives
animals, yeah.
Right? The body of ire is less consolidated, less cohesive, less easy to pinpoint. But consumers are very, very adaptive, as we talked about at other moments on the show. And I suspect that over the next 10 years, we'll get more and more and more things on lists which consumers don't want to tolerate. And if CVS is as foresighted, and in keeping with the curve as they seem to be here, they may be some of the first companies to say, no, we're not doing, cruelty products. Or no, we're only going to allow certain kinds of drinks, juices, right, on our shelves. So a lot of that is about the wave of evolving consumer opinion and lather.
Will they advertise saying with their CEO, Menlo, or somebody looking at the camera and saying, sorry to inconvenience the 18% of you who still smoke, but we decided that we couldn't deal with the inconsistency. Are they going to? No. Are they essentially going to promote this, or they just want the news media?
I think they'll
promote?
Let the news media do it. They're not really a big kind of like in your face promotional company anyway, right?
But would it sell if it turns out they were the Budweisers of pharmacies and drug? Would the American consumer, if they saw that on television, would they consider that to be something that would cause them to go to CVS rather than Walgreens?
Oh, I think already it's probably causing that. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a little war of words out about whether Walgreens is the real loser in this. And another interesting question is whether it'll put pressure on places like Walmart, right, which sells cigarettes.
Right.
But here's the reason I don't think they'll advertise it, Jim, because only about 5% of all cigarettes in the United States, that's $107 billion worth of cigarettes every year. That's bigger than the beer market, for those of you that are interested.
Really?
Bigger than the beer market.
It is.
Yep. The beer market's about $100 billion. Only about 5% of those cigarettes, right, make it $5 billion and a little change, are actually sold in drugstores. The overwhelming majority are sold in convenience stores.
And gas stations.
And attached gas stations.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Right.
That makes sense.
So, and, you know, as a couple of articles I read pointed out, you know, they're not going to be throwing out cigarettes anytime soon because, one, you don't have big chains that can make a big impact real quick. You'll have mostly mom and pops in terms of convenience stores. And secondly, right, a lot of people go into a convenience store specifically to buy a pack of cigarettes. So you stop selling cigarettes, you cut a lot of the oxygen out of your business, cut the oxygen off to your business.
You know, may I just talk about CVS for 1 minute as a health care provider? Because
yeah.
I've taken advantage of them, you know, with stuff like flu shots and prescriptions and so forth.
Marjorie had back surgery in Brookline at a CVS a couple of weeks ago.
That's right. It was
phenomenal. No, but seriously, do ever.
Wave to the neighbors as they came in, you know, to pick up their stuff.
But think about how aggressively they advertise flu shots, for example.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Well, and they also are really good customer service CVS, if you have a prescription at CVS, they will call you at home to tell you you should be back for your next prescription. And if your kids have prescriptions and, of course, they lose their strep throat pill or whatever it is, CVS will float you an extra pill for a day or two.
Wow.
And you can't get that if you were going to go, you know, there's so much red tape at the
doctor's. Oh, my God, try doing that at the Brigham, right?
Forget it. Right. But they say your little dingbat kid lost her pills. Okay, we'll give you one until we can get the doctor or that sort of thing.
I feel compelled to say, as does the Walgreens on the Cambridge Sunville line where
I've never
hang
dealt,
out.
Okay. I've
way.
Never
no,
dealt
I'm
with
just
Walgreens.
Saying, yeah.
But
okay.
The thing is, the comparison to going in for an ear infection or a strep throat to CVS, which is quick and easy, mm-hmm. you're in and out. They're very nice. Customer service is great.
No appointments.
I can see this becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. As time goes on.
Absolutely. So, you know, think about the economy as a kind of ecosystem, right? Like, and it's got these interesting Darwinian shocks to it where evolution occurs. So, and new species, you know, mutate. So I think some of the interesting mutations around, right, both the crisis in the healthcare system and what it means in all kinds of ways, and one big response to it, the Affordable Care Act, is we're going to see these mutations of businesses more and more and more like MinuteClinic, and not just MinuteClinics. We're going to see after-hours care centers, which are freestanding, maybe CVS will pioneer these as well, freestanding, you know, places, you know, 3,000 square feet in a strip mall where you can go and get all these different things done along the lines of MinuteClinic, right, with mostly staffed by nurse practitioners who are a lot cheaper, or MAs, medical assistants, or PAs, physician's assistants, much cheaper to do than staffing purely emergency room docs, right? You're going to see more and more and more of those. And all those people that are poured into emergency rooms because they have nowhere else to go will start going to these different mutations. So this is just the beginning of a fascinating set of adaptations that may end up delivering value all around.
You know, I don't even know. You mentioned the Affordable Care Act a few minutes ago. How does the Affordable Care Act, if you know, treat these, we're calling them now generically minute clinics? One would assume they would encourage things that they thought were of decent quality, which also are attached to low cost. So this, you would think, would be right up their alley for a whole handful of services. Yeah. What's the reimbursement reality?
The answer is I don't know. But what we do know at a very specific level, I don't know if you can get reimbursed for a tonsil, you know, tonsil check or a strep throat check. What I do know is that that in general, right, the Affordable Care Act and other insurance offerings are basically slowly and steadily, or rapidly and steadily, raising premiums. So, you know, it makes a lot more sense if you have a really high premium to go spend a little bit of money at a minute clinic versus I think I'll wait in line or I'll wait in time to see my doctor and pay that bill as part of using up your deductible. A lot more sense.
Or not get health care services at all.
Which
I mean,
has
a lot
been
of people have insurance
response.
And can't afford
that's
to
right.
use it.
That's
which,
right.
Which obviously could be adjusted as a
Absolutely.
Result of this, too.
So I'm going to bet as well that a lot of these minute clinics are going to have a relationship with insurance companies of whatever ilk in which the patient brokers it. So again, CVS is going to have a cash and carry, credit and carry transaction business. That sure as hell makes accounts receivable, collecting your money a lot easier.
We're talking to Nancy Kane from Harvard Business School. Why is there any hesitation from any of the competitors of more than a minute, other than looking like all we do is follow the lead of CVS? There seems to me
That's
to be
really
almost no
question.
Downside here. Assuming the margin, not assuming, since the margin is as small as you suggest, and the upside is potentially as big, why are there any holdouts? Or will there be any holdouts in 6 months?
Let's take 2 years. I'll bet there won't be
I'll
bet Target
and,
will be done. Target's been done for a long time, since the mid-90s, actually. They stopped selling cigarettes in the 90s.
I did not know that.
I think 98, but don't.
And by the way, let me interrupt you before you come on your answer. For those who are listening and saying, well, wait a second, we haven't had these at our pharmacies in Boston for a while. What's going on? There is actually either a law or a resolution or a city council order or something. So they were sort of ahead of the curve. But I interrupted you. So ultimately, you think everybody in the same business comes along?
I think convenience stores, no.
Right. Because it's such a huge percentage of their...
But lots and lots of other players, yes. Because the profit margins are relatively small. Most cigarettes are still bought not at drugstores or at Walmart, but at convenience stores and gas stations. And lastly, because, you know, there's just increasingly really great data that limit access even the tiniest bit to cigarettes. And you can really, really ratchet down smoking-related illnesses and death in a cohort. So, for example, the Canada has discovered that putting the cigarettes under the lower counter at cashier where the client, the customer has to ask for it, massively reduces teenage smoking and all the reverb that comes along as you get older and you're still smoking. So just limiting access a little bit has major positive ripple effects. So I think there's going to be pressure lots of different ways, brand-wise, consumer-wise, healthcare-wise, you know, CDC, Center for Disease Control-wise, for lots and lots of players to climb on this bandwagon. It will happen. It's been steadily happening in terms of how smokers are getting ostracized for 20 years. And this is the latest frontier of this.
We only have a minute and a half, and I know this is too broad a question to answer in a short period of time, so I'll ask you anyway. Is being a good corporate citizen, whatever that means, is being a good corporate citizen generally good business? If it turns out we're not going to invest, says this company, we're not going to invest in any companies that do business with X country or invest in this kind of anti-environmental.
Or invest in tobacco companies.
Or whatever is right. Exactly. Is that generally good business or is that niche market kind of stuff?
So,
meaning, does the general population care?
If they know. There's lots of evidence that they care. There's less evidence that they vote consistently with their wallets in terms of brand loyalty, especially in products that aren't promotionally priced. What there is that is again, less quantifiable, but from my own perspective as a historian, that is very, very interesting. And again, the iceberg, most of it below the surface, the tip now appearing above the water, is this. Consumers who don't feel so enfranchised as voters and members of their kind of town or as members of their communities in terms of their ability to really affect change are using their dollars increasingly, right, in all kinds of ways to vote for what they think is good business, whether it's Nike shouldn't use child labor way back in the early 90s.
Locally owned stores,
right, organic milk because we don't want our young girls to all that. It's happening. It's here.
It is happening.
Nancy, you may not know this. Jim loves to ban things and mandate things. And Jack just emailed that Jim must be drooling at the thought of mandating what CVS must take off its shelves next.
I was drooling a little bit just out of one side of my mouth. But I was drooling a little bit. Yes, I was.
Nancy Kane is an historian at the Harvard Business School.
Pleasure.
Where she holds the James E. Robeson Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book is Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. And Nancy is with us every Tuesday. Thank you guys for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tune in tomorrow for Open Mic with with Chief Justice Margaret Marshall. We're also going to check in with the Boston Globe's editor, Brian McGrory. Our show is a production of WGBH. Our team, Chelsea Murs, Amanda McGowan, Will Roslip, and John Parker. I'm Marjorie Egan.
I'm Jim Browdy.
Thanks so much for listening.